Atheist Nomads, episode 278, Don't Ignore Secular Voters.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I'm Dustin. I have a degree in theology. Joining me is Lauren.
Hi.
A awesome stay-at-home
Don't
mom.
Have much credentials.
And we have Gary Mitchell, the president of Idaho Atheists.
Hey, listeners. How's it going?
And so this week, it's Thanksgiving. So, of course, happy Thanksgiving if you're listening on the day of release. Hopefully, your families aren't giving you too much crap. And I also...
Just eat your feelings.
Yes. And if that doesn't work, just shut them down with alcohol.
That's the American way.
Mm. Actually, just ignore family altogether. Friendsgiving is where it's at.
Friendsgiving, trick-or-treating is where it's at. So you start in like about 11 a.m. and you start hitting houses. And by the time you get 6 p.m., you're full. You've had three different kinds of turkey. It's great.
I feel like you'd have to just grab a small case of wine to bring a bottle to every location, though. Get kind of spendy.
That's true. That's like, true. You can get those little bottles.
That's true.
You can get it in cans now.
You can get cans. Yeah. And the little sip, boxes, the little tiny boxes, like the
Boda
juice box.
Boda box.
Yeah.
Juice
well,
box.
The tiny juice box, they got like a juice box that's versions true. Of wine with the little straw and everything.
Yeah. And in other news, we have a survey. I have so far only announced the survey at the end of the episode. This time I'm getting a little bit earlier. If you want to take part, atheistnomads.com/survey. I have hopefully, by the time this episode goes out, have completed my website redesign. I'm hoping that the way it is looking right now as of recording, I will be satisfied with. That will remain to be seen.
I'm going
to
make him be satisfied with it so that I can have my husband back.
It is more mobile friendly, which is a nice plus of the redesign. And it has new landing pages. So to find out how to support the show, you can go to atheistnomads.com/donate. And if you aren't actually subscribed yet, you can go to atheistnomads.com/subscribe. And it's a much cleaner look on the main website. It's nice.
Yeah, go check it out.
Yeah, I'm checking it out now. It looks really, really nice. I like it.
I had a lot of fun getting all the colors to all match. And stressing over 20 pixels.
Hmm. It's all about the pixels. Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, that's, you know, welcome to graphic design hell.
Mm-hmm.
It's always just a few pixels off. You're lucky because you're not doing it for somebody else.
Yeah.
So if you got it perfect and then the person swoops in and says, can you make it happier? And you just, you're like, what does that even mean?
Can you make one of the lines in the shape of a cat? That's you've seen the expert.
Yes.
I would think make it happier would be brighten the colors.
You'd think, but yeah. I've been on the wrong end of graphic design before, and it's some of the requests can get pretty hilarious.
Oh man, yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and jump into the news. The case CNN versus Trump was filed after CNN's Jim Acosta was ejected from the White House briefing room and his press pass was revoked for asking the president questions the day after the midterm elections.
Okay, it wasn't that simple. Did you see the video?
Which one? The one the White House sent out or the one the actual video?
I watched a comparative.
Mm, yeah, that's the best. Yeah.
The comparative one, but before they cut him off. He was getting pretty belligerent, I have to admit.
Acosta?
They were trying, I mean, obviously Trump shut him down and tried to move on to somebody else, and he kept interrupting, which, you know, you give him credit for it because he's a journalist and he deserves mm-hmm. to have his question answered. But it was just, I can't imagine that going over well with any president.
It hasn't been needed before.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it is usually when the press asks a question, they get some response that they're okay with or that the country would be
with. That's very true. No, I mean, and then of course, and then there's the whole debate about whether or not he hit the woman or something. And it's like, that's just not even.
That was doctored.
That was doctored. But yeah, he won, right?
Not yet.
Okay.
So what has happened so far is the judge has issued a temporary restraining order. And this is requiring that Acosta's press pass be reinstated, which it has. That is because he is likely to prevail on the merits that his First and Fifth Amendment rights were violated by being ejected. First Amendment, specifically the freedom of the press.
Yeah, there's... Well, and obviously that just goes to show that this loss, how needed this lawsuit is, because this has been a problem for several years.
Mm-hmm. So in response, Trump on an interview with Fox News said, quote, "It's not a big deal. What they said, though, is that we have to create rules and regulations for conduct, etc. We're going to write them up. It's not a big deal. If he misbehaves, we'll throw him out or we'll stop the news conference." End quote.
Yeah, that, I mean, that sounds exactly like them, honestly. So the one thing about the Acosta being there to begin with is, you know, they've not had any press conferences for a while. Sarah Huckabee Sanders has been pretty much, you know, disappeared for a long time. I don't know, weeks, I think. And so the chance of getting an actual response from the White House on anything is pretty important right now, because they're not answering any questions.
Mm-hmm.
They've not had the opportunity to ask any. So I think everything's elevated. The importance of the journalists is elevated, and the importance of the freedom of press right now is extremely elevated. So all that together, like, the White House obviously doesn't want to answer any questions. They never really do, I don't think.
No White House wants to.
I mean, not really.
And this White House really doesn't want to.
Yeah. It's one thing to kind of obfuscate a little bit. It's another thing to outright lie. And I think, you know, obviously the outright lies are the majority of what's going on with the current White House. But, you know, the media has a responsibility to some kind of truth.
Yeah.
And of course, there's some fluctuation there. But if they're not getting anything what they think resembles it, yeah, they kind of fight a little bit. And that's what I felt Acosta was doing. And I think it's important that people push a little bit.
Well, and it's also important to note that with the separation of powers, there's the fourth one that isn't often spoken of, and that is the press. We have to have a free press that can keep all three branches of government in check, not by actually having any power over them, but being the ones to let the electorate know what's going on.
Extremely important. It's an unofficial fourth, right? But one of the most important still.
There's a reason why it was in the First Amendment.
Right.
It was absolutely critical. You cannot have a free country if you don't have a free press. And it's even important just for our show, because all the news we talk about is stuff that's getting reported by the press, and we're reporting it secondhand. If the press was being curtailed, we can't talk about stuff.
Can't talk about what you don't know.
Exactly. Oh man, it's frustrating, it's annoying, it's aggravating. But at least the courts aren't completely ruined by Trump.
Not yet. He's some of the federal spots he's kind of done a number on. Of course, the Supreme Court, huge number. But yeah, I overall, the courts are still, they seem to be decently, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and honestly, I think if this, even with Trump's appointees to the Supreme Court, if this went to the Supreme Court, I would have a hard time imagining them ruling anything other than reporters have the right to ask questions.
Yeah, it'd be a pretty tough gambit on their side of things. Like, it would change the course of everything if they if they found a way to rule against them.
Oh yeah.
The unintended consequences would be pretty huge.
Yes, it would. And on October 2, a Saudi national with residency in the US who is working for the Washington Post, so another big media outlet in the U.S. that has been critical of the president, was summoned to the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, where he was executed, dismembered, and removed from the consulate in suitcases.
Yeah, that's like just some serious evil James Bond stuff going on right there.
Yeah. Khashoggi was an enemy of the Saudi royal family and the Trump family as well. And allegedly, he was on an enemy list that Jared Kushner gave to the Saudi crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, several months back. Now it's alleged, including by the Turkish government, that the Trump administration is offering to extradite a Turkish cleric living in the U.S. as a bribe to get them to call off the investigation of the murder. And Turkey is not willing to take Trump's bait, even though they claim that this cleric was the one behind that instigated the attempted coup against the Turkish government.
Wow. So like they're number one.
Yeah.
So that's that's bad.
This would be the equivalent of if somebody offered Trump Hillary Clinton.
If she were actually guilty of doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
Besides being Hillary Clinton. But
okay, yeah, that joke flopped.
the fact that we are now, yeah, the fact that we're treating the press with disdain in this manner while, you know, helping out a terroristic government. I mean,
they should be enemies. They're not, yeah, but they should be enemies of the state.
Yeah. I kind of know why. We've never tossed them on the list, but they deserve to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the fact that they're so blatant about it, like they didn't really hide this stuff much. It should be very easy to do this in Saudi Arabia with no tracks whatsoever. And they've got plenty of tracks, so they didn't obviously care to actually cover their tracks in getting rid of this guy. It just kind of shows, you know, how much power they've got to do this usually.
Oh, yeah.
And now there's like this, you know, microscope on them, and it's a weird situation for them, I think, where usually this stuff just kind of goes away, and it's not gone away yet. It's actually gotten worse.
Mm-hmm.
The information's gotten worse, and the U.S. has still not really done anything about it. Like, this is, you know, one of our citizens. This is an actual journalist.
And people are looking the other way.
Yeah. Like we should be doing something about this. Many things we could do, something at least. I would be like, you know, just say that they're terrible people, something.
Now, one thing that's kind of ironic with this is Turkey is where the U.S. has often done its dirty work. Now, Saudi Arabia is doing their dirty work there.
Yeah.
It has longstanding been that if they need to torture somebody, you hand the person over to Turkey and you let Turkey torture them, get the information, and then return the prisoner to you so that the U.S. doesn't actually have to do the torture. In some cases, they've also used Israel, depending on who they're trying to avoid pissing off in the process. And to use a consulate for murder, for an assassination of a political enemy,
that's so ballsy. And terrible. I mean, like I said, this is like fictitious James Bond stuff. This is
like this
shouldn't be real, but
this is the kind of offense that should threaten the ending of formal relations between Turkey and Saudi Arabia.
And the US and Saudi Arabia. And the US and Turkey.
Everybody.
But like you said, we've been chipping away at the respect for free journalism here in the U.S. So there's a lot of people who just don't care to speak up about it.
Yeah.
And then a lot of us, I think, don't realize what a big deal it is because there is not a whole lot out there right now. There's more news coming out every day about it, but it's all really, once you stretch something out past like 3 or 4 days, people start to forget and not care. Apathy is set in, I think.
Well, and this journalist was critical of the Trump administration. So he got on the enemies list. And that's terrifying that they have an enemies list.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure every administration has. These guys are just so freaking obvious about it.
I don't think you would call it the enemies list. Maybe, you know, persons of interest, something like that. But the fact that the Trump administration would call it exactly an enemies list speaks volumes to where they stand on things. And to the truth, like a lot of people in politics don't really like the hard truth.
Mm-hmm.
They like something they can spin a little bit. But when you're so diehard against anybody seeing a semblance of the truth to the point where you're okay with the journalist getting murdered.
And dismembered and carried out in suitcases. Right. What the hell?
And I think melted down later too with acid.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
And realistically, you know, there are a lot of people who talk about how racist the Trump administration is. That if you're not white, you're lesser. I think it's more if it's politically expedient, you are lesser. I don't know that I would necessarily actually say that in their actual motivations that they're necessarily racist. I think it's all just about political expediency And right now, with the Republican base, it is politically expedient to be racist. Trump will do whatever he needs to for the sell. And this would be a case of, all right, they got rid of an enemy. He's brown. He's Muslim. Big whoop. Turkish Muslim, politically expedient. Let's get rid of him. The base won't care because he's brown.
Right.
And in all realisticness, if the administration itself isn't actually racist, if Trump himself isn't actually racist, that's scarier. Because somebody who will use racists for their own political advantage is worse.
Yeah, I think Trump is more about the socioeconomic side of things more than he is about race itself. It just happens to be the socioeconomics in this country are racist as shit. So that's just kind of where things come out.
Just happens to be.
It's the sales angle. I have to work with sales at work. I would have to say I've rarely, if ever, met somebody in sales who's really honest in their motives.
Yeah, same. Yeah, you almost can't be. It's the worst form of capitalism, especially if you're, so my big thing about sales is almost always there for something you don't need.
Yeah.
And they have to lie to you to make you want to or need it, feel like you need it. Otherwise, just like a CSR, a customer service representative is all you need. Like, I need information about this thing to see if I want it. That's perfect. Yeah. That's smart business. But sales, it's there to use human traits against you. Yeah, whatever anxiety or anything else you've got, that's their job.
And Trump is first and foremost a salesman.
Yeah.
He sold real estate, stopped making money off of that because he's incompetent. So he just started selling his name. And that got him all the way to the White House. Literally just selling his name.
Yeah, I'm kind of evil brilliance in some ways, but it could happen by incompetence as well. Like, capitalism doesn't necessarily reward intelligence. So, I'm okay with calling it not necessarily smart, but slick, if nothing else.
Yeah. And with the recent midterms, there are some interesting trends that politicians really should take note of and that we should take heart in. Protestants are now a minority of the electorate. This is the first time that has happened in history. White evangelicals continue to decline in their share of the electorate. People who identify with no religion have risen to 17% of voters. A 55% increase over 2006's mere 11%. The number of openly non-theist or humanists in office has risen across federal and state levels by threefold.
Wow. Yeah, just in this last election?
This last election.
Yeah, no, that was pretty impressive, actually.
Okay, the number is still only 47.
Still,
but
yeah.
That's a tripling. It should be thousands across federal and state offices, but...
By the numbers, yeah.
But yeah, there are now 7 new members headed to the House of Representatives that are religiously unaffiliated. And Kyrsten Sinema, who ascribes to no religion, as she puts it, when people try to identify her as an atheist, she is headed to the U.S. Senate.
Honestly, many of these, the new people, they're fairly unabashed in exactly what they stand for, which is wonderful. And the fact that they've got elected, they're now visible and will remain visible at least for a couple of years. That's going to be huge. I think for secularism, in its entirety, it's going to be hard to show them as monsters because they've actually done a decent job, or even, you know, an okay-ish job. It's a big step just being visible. Like, that's a big, big thing. And I'm pretty excited about the upcoming. I know there's probably not going to be a ton that happens. It's a mixed bag right now, but I think as individuals, these people will kind of shine a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've seen, they've done a great job already.
Well, it'll be nice to have some members of the House Freethought caucus, which I'm sure they'll all join, that will actually identify as none on religion.
Yeah,
that would be amazing. As opposed to refuse to answer or Christian other or Jewish or something like that. This will be nice. This is all a step in the right direction. Mississippi Senate race is headed to a runoff, so that one's not over. And Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith is all but guaranteed to win, but she's getting some heat for joking about being in the front row if supporters invited her to a public hanging.
Yeah.
That is trying to put politely that if her supporters were to lynch her black opponent, she would be there.
Yeah, not a huge surprise, really. But again, the blatancy, we're still a very racist country. We have been for pretty much ever. But being so blatantly racist, that it's hideous. Like, I think most places have an element of racism, you know, most countries. But damn, this is kind of like an unheard of level since like turn of the century. I don't think we're even so blatantly racist even then much of the time. You had to cage something, but it's crazy.
The turn of the 20th century, lynchings were normal, especially in Mississippi.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, they were common, but you still didn't talk about it publicly. Like you.
By the end of the 20th century, lynchings were rare.
Yeah.
In Mississippi. They're still rare, but it hasn't been cool for elected officials who are still campaigning to joke about them since at least the 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this gets worse. Governor Phil Bryant came to her defense, representing her at a press conference, and he said, "Absolutely, we have been sensitive to race relations in our state. Today, I talked about the genocide of over 20 million African-American children. See, in my heart, I am confused about where the outrage is at about 20 million African-American children that have been aborted."
Wow. Yeah, I'm kind of speechless on that one.
Those don't equate.
No. I assume that there's a, you know, cohesive thought that he's trying to get across in some manner, and I try to look good. Apparently not capable whatsoever of doing that.
No, there is a cohesive thought. His biggest goal as governor is to ban abortion in his state.
Yeah, right.
So his thought process is, oh, she made a racist joke. That's not as bad as his pet issue. He's trying to minimize the fact that she made that joke and score points for his issue at the same time.
Right.
And for one, if abortion is a genocide of African American children, it is a very ineffective one since there are more white would-be babies that are aborted than black would-be babies.
Yes.
So that fails right there. I have heard it more often referred to as a white genocide than anything else because it is mostly white babies, would-be babies.
Right.
Because they aren't babies yet at the point that they're aborted. Aborting an actual baby is murder. There is a difference. And, it's just he's just twisting it.
In kind of the worst way. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's making everything worse in that one statement. Yeah, you're right. The black community doesn't tend to have nearly as many facilities available for abortion.
Especially in Mississippi.
Especially in Mississippi. And in fact, we're up to like 5 states now where getting an abortion is functionally impossible in that state. You have to go across state lines.
Yeah.
5. That's not good at all. And I think we just added another one this last week, if I'm not mistaken. I want to say Ohio, maybe.
We'll be talking about Ohio next.
Oh, okay, good. The black community, they do not have the abortion issue that white people do. And I think going on the back of something so atrocious that somebody said to twist your own sick agenda, even if you believe in it strongly, that's bad politics.
Yeah. And this is what he was saying was so wrong It's or it was so far off, it wasn't even wrong. And I finally heard somebody use a metaphor to describe that well. And that's, if you get asked, what color is the sky? And the answer is Honda Accord. It's not even wrong. Because it's not even an answer to the question.
Yeah, completely off the board entirely.
He thought it made a connection, which, for this comparison, a sky blue Honda Accord, oh yeah, that's obviously an effective answer. No, it's not.
No.
Nope. And anybody who tries to deflect as opposed to actually respond to it, but how do you respond to a joke about lynching a former cabinet member who's a candidate for the Senate?
Yeah, the only good response there is to say that they're wrong. That is not what we believe in, and she should not be elected to anything. That's the correct response.
Right, and even in his from his political angle, probably the best response was, it was a joke, she regrets it because it was in poor taste, and just leave it there. Instead, deflect it as, oh, that's not a real issue. Abortion is a real issue. That is so belittling.
Yeah, it is. And obviously ignorant. I mean, yeah. On both topics of racism and abortion.
Okay, so Ohio. 2 years ago, Ohio's governor aborted his state's heartbeat bill with a veto. And it's now back in a lame duck session and has passed the state house. It's now headed to the Ohio Senate. The compromise bill that Kasich did sign 2 years ago banned abortions after the 20-week mark. Legally, like against Roe versus Wade at this point in time, a 20-week abortion ban is probably reasonable.
Yeah, it's within the realm, I'd say.
Because we're reaching the point now where a premature fetus at about 24 weeks, I've heard of even down to, in rare cases, down to 22 weeks as actually being viable in the NICU.
Wow.
And if you go with the standard of the choice between inducing labor versus aborting, I think that's a pretty reasonable standard. However, technology keeps lowering that number as medicine gets better. So this heartbeat bill would ban abortions once a heartbeat can be detected. They mislabel it as fetal heartbeat because at the point that a heartbeat can be detected, it's not a fetus.
Right.
It's an embryo. And thanks to modern technology, that's 6 weeks into a pregnancy.
And that's before half the people even know that they're pregnant.
Well, okay, with the way pregnancy is counted, it is from last menstrual period. Conception usually happens about 2.5-3 weeks after last menstrual period.
Mm. Right. So yeah, you're easily within the realm of, yeah.
So within 3 weeks of fertilization, you can't abort it. 2 weeks after you're late on your period, you can't abort it. That is effectively a ban on abortion.
Yeah. I mean, not the only state that wants to try that, but the fact that they've gotten so close, and I'm sure it's going to get shot down, right? Like it's going to go through the courts.
Mm-hmm.
Why states keep wanting to waste taxpayer money on this shit when they obviously know they cannot win. Any intelligent lawyer would tell them, no, this is an unwinnable situation for you. I have no idea. I mean, it's just political points, right?
Well, it's political points. It's campaign fundraising. Yeah. It's
wedge issue shit.
And it's also forcing the issue in courts to try to get concessions against Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And if you can push it from as many angles, if you can attack it as much as possible, the chance of it getting, of cracks in Roe getting put in, goes up. And that's the game.
Whittle away at it. Yeah.
And as it all works out, the more you can whittle away at it, as NICU technology and practice gets better, and as medical technology gets better, any changes you make will have greater rewards as time goes on. You know, the fetal heartbeat concept was started at the time when it wasn't detectable that early.
Right.
And we've seen in recent years the transvaginal ultrasound requirements. You know, when Lauren was eight weeks pregnant with Kylie, she got the first ultrasound. They couldn't do it over the belly, so it was a transvaginal ultrasound.
Mm.
And at 8 weeks, we were able to hear and see that heartbeat. You don't get to hear it outside of that for a couple months.
Right.
And what they're trying to push, all of these different rules, you know, mandating a transvaginal ultrasound, that in and of itself just seems weird and arbitrary. No, that's trying to get it set up so that a heartbeat is getting checked for before an abortion can be done. And for this abortion ban, that would also require that a transvaginal ultrasound be done to check for a heartbeat.
Right. Yeah.
These are all attempts to at the same goal.
Yeah. And it's all about viability at that point, instead of women's right to choose. Like they're trying to use the science of everything against the actual purpose, or what I feel is the purpose. Then going back to viability, there are plenty of areas where viability would actually bring about a terrible life for mm-hmm. the child. Not a consequence whatsoever in most of the laws. They don't care. It goes back to viability. But yeah, what it really comes down to is whether the woman has the right to control her own body. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are a fair time span. Like, okay, you've kind of crossed threshold. All right, I'm okay with some of those things. But when they bring the viability down to such a low level as to be kind of almost absurd, where there's no chance for a choice. Yeah, that is.
Now, realistically, though, viability is never going to, until we reach the point of artificial wombs, at which point I really hope that doesn't get used to. I know they'll try, but
they will.
Until artificial wombs are perfected, viability has limits because you have to have a certain amount of organs, a certain amount of organ development to be able to process anything they give you in the NICU.
Right.
To be able to process air.
Right.
You know, the lungs have to be able to at least be able to extract oxygen.
Yeah. Some functionality.
And so there are certain hard limits, and I think we're approaching the biological hard limits of medical advances and technological advances lowering viability. Yet they're going to keep pushing this, and they have changed the fight from viability to heartbeats, because heartbeats are used to be an easy measure of viability.
That's true. Yeah.
Now with technology, it's much earlier. But if you've ever been in the room with somebody who's brain dead.
Yeah. Heartbeat doesn't really mean all that much.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And again, quality of life for the child after, like, post-birth health, not a consequence whatsoever, apparently, in most of these laws.
Yeah. Oh man. All right. So we got a funny one.
Oh, good. Something lighthearted.
Kat Kerr is a self-proclaimed prophetess and weather warrior, and she posted a video on Facebook about the California fires. So let's have a listen to the first of the crazy things she said.
But you know, I do know that if you remove the oxygen from the fire, it will go out. It has to feed on that. And so I thank you, Father, right now that even as we declare together, let's say this together, we command a low pressure system to begin to form, just like it did in the Bible when they were asking for rain to come. Remember that? By us using the host, by taking words of authority and using them.
She understands that fires require fuel and oxygen. That's good. That's good that she knows that much.
Mm-hmm. start.
She did go into a little bit more detail, asking that the oxygen be removed from the fire, but not any of the surrounding atmosphere, so as to not harm anybody or anything else living in the area, just the fire itself. That would be incredibly difficult to do, since gases have a tendency to try to spread out and mix and, you know, even things out. That's one reason why by the time fire gets to an area quite a ways away, or the smoke gets to an area quite a ways away, it is very diffuse and it's just kind of everywhere, not a plume. It all spreads and mixes, and this would be very difficult. It would violate the laws of physics, which she seems to kind of understand.
Almost. I mean, she understands the Bible to a degree, it looks like, but not very well at that, too. So,
yeah.
Like, she's kind of a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, she wants God to remove the oxygen and bring rain. She's got a better idea, since there's already a storm system somewhere.
We declare and decree that storm Avery, there's a picture of it. There's a picture of where that weather system is. That's the area we're speaking to right now. It sure would be good if we could just kind of move that over the fires, wouldn't it? We can command it to go there. Let's see what happens.
It's on the East Coast.
It's a stretch.
Storms don't travel like that.
No, they don't. If they did, they would probably destroy homes and families and people.
It would be... Well, okay, so to provide a little bit of a weather lesson for about the U.S., for the sake of our foreign listeners and those who haven't been crazy enough to try to figure out how to make weather interesting for a science club like I did several years back. There is one driving force in the U.S. weather-wise, and it's called the jet stream. Depending on the time of year and various pressures, on the West Coast, it's over somewhere between the Oregon-Washington border and the Oregon-California border, usually.
Yeah.
Usually it's traveling over Oregon at some point. It usually crosses through Idaho, not Nevada. Occasionally it dips down into Nevada, but not very often. In Michigan, when I was there, it was responsible for one, you know, for that Thanksgiving, for it to be 70 degrees outside.
Damn.
The jet stream was up into Canada, so it was nice and warm in Michigan. Yeah, a couple weeks later, the jet stream dropped below us and it got freaking cold, because when the jet stream was north of us, the weather that was affecting us was coming off of the Gulf of Mexico. When it was south, the weather that was affecting us was coming off the Hudson Bay. Big difference.
Huge.
The jet stream manages everything. It's the reason why hurricanes don't just hit Texas and just keep on going up straight to the north. They get pushed off to the east. Anything that hits the coast, there's a tendency for them to get either hug the coast or get pushed over. And there's a reason why when they're coming into the Caribbean, they start getting pushed back out to the east. That is the jet stream, which flows from west to east. Pushing an ice storm from the East Coast to the West Coast against the jet stream across the Rocky Mountains.
Yep. You'd have to go across the world first and come back around. It'd be the easier way.
If there were a God and he was interested in controlling weather, it would be far easier to start, take a weather system that is off of the coast of China and hit California.
Yeah. It's some SimCity shit right there, where you just have a random storm pop up.
Oh, man. If you're going to be a prophetess and weather warrior, at least read up on the fucking jet stream. I mean, god damn. For our final news story, we have a update on a story we talked about before.
Ooh, callbacks.
Yep. So in episode 247, all the way back in April of this year, we talked about Sally Hunt suing over getting forcibly ejected by the mayor of a town in Missouri, Wentzville, at a meeting of their board of aldermen. And this is because she criticized the "In God We Trust" sign in their chambers.
Which is, you know, fair.
Yeah. he cut her short on her time and
in the most rude manner I've seen while.
And then had the cops, even though she was eventually already like leaving on her own power, had the cops like made sure the cops actually grabbed her and forced her out.
Yeah. Which again, this pisses me off every time. Cops are not defenders of the status quo. They're mm-hmm. defenders of the law. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that is complete horseshit.
So she didn't break any law. She broke no laws. Cops should not have been called. Therefore, yeah. She should not have been manhandled.
Right. Like, I get that defending the status quo is easier. That's not their fucking job. Their job is defending the law. And when there's no laws broken, they got fuck all to do.
So the town is settling this case, which is smart.
Yeah.
So they're going to pay her legal fees, which at this point are in the single digit number of thousands. So, you know, a 4-digit number is pretty decent for settling a lawsuit for a violation of civil liberties.
Yeah.
They're going to put policies in place that will make it clear that the public can't be censored for their beliefs.
Woo-woo!
Yeah, it's a win.
They will pass and read a resolution affirming their commitment to the First Amendment and acknowledging that members of all religious traditions are welcome to participate in the government. And finally, they will be training the town's police officers in what rights citizens have, especially in meetings of the Board of Aldermen, and instructing them and training them that they are not to interfere unless a crime has taken place, regardless of what the mayor has said.
Nice.
To silence someone.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Awesome. Let's take that mayor down a peg.
Now, is the mayor still mayor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was kind of curious if these changes came about after his removal or something, but...
Well, I'm assuming he's still mayor. I didn't see anything suggesting he wasn't.
Gotcha.
But I'm sure either he or the rest of the Board of Aldermen took a look at how much this would cost them if they actually took it to court, and their chance of success on the merits, and their chance of success on the merits would be zero.
Yeah, considering all the stuff that they had to do. That was a zero.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, public apology and pay for legal fees. Yeah, they had no chance.
And they went well beyond that. So with stories like this, when they initially come up, somebody filed a lawsuit. There's the outrage of what happened that caused this filing of the lawsuit. I always hope I'm going to see the follow-up on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is nice to see. Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I came across this one.
Yeah, especially when it actually is kind of in our favor.
Yeah, because the goal every time there's a lawsuit is that we win. And that's the kind of the intent behind sharing stories about some atheists filed a lawsuit over civil rights is because either a horrible injustice happened, there's half, and the goal is always to be able to, the hope is always to be able to report that we won. And it's so nice when A, we win, and B, we can report on it.
Yeah, and C, honestly, in this one, the actual changes are being made.
Mm-hmm.
Winning a lawsuit's one thing, always wonderful, but they're apparently doing the work to correct their shitty behavior.
Yeah, now she needs to run for alderman.
Yeah, absolutely, or mayor.
Yeah.
Or mayor, yeah.
So if I'm not mistaken, she was, she came into that meeting at the behest of somebody else. Mm-hmm. So she was not local.
Okay.
So, she was a representative, for the secular community, I think, and somebody else asked her.
Well, then
to
they need
in.
To get somebody to run well, for.
Agreed. Yeah.
Okay.
What the hell's an alderman? You know, ever since that episode of Futurama with the little fire guy, I've always wondered what is that a Canadian thing? But apparently not.
No, it depends on the context as to what it is. In this case, it's the town council.
Okay.
They're the members of the town council, and they call them aldermen. In the case of Dr. Pedrito Maynard Reed, who is one of my theology professors, he's an alderman at Walla Walla University. He is specifically their alderman for diversity. So if a minority is getting oppressed, he is supposed to take up that case. When I reached out to him about what the college was doing to atheists at Walla Walla, his response was, oh, can't help you there.
Huh.
Okay.
The one minority we can't do anything about.
But
Sorry. Theoretically,
aldermen are, in most cases, they're kind of like arbiters, but more to back up the people. And if you call it a board of aldermen, theoretically, these are the people standing up for the people to the mayor, is what they're supposed to be.
Okay. That's what you should be.
But for the an analogy, to put this in perspective for at least us locally, this would be like if Gary or I were invited to buy atheists in Nampa or Meridian to come speak to their city council. The chances of that happening would actually be relatively high.
Yeah, given all instances, yeah.
Uh-huh.
In your small community, especially if it's oppressive, it's pretty easy to get fucked over by your local community. So somebody else speaking on your behalf is a pretty wise idea. So
yeah. Looking at you, Nampa.
Yeah, and then Caldwell.
Oh, man, yeah. As you may recall, in the last year and a half or so, we've been kind of tweaking the recording and release schedule a little bit here and there. You know, we initially, for quite a while, had been doing Tuesday recording, Thursday release, and that amount of time between recording and release allowed for much fresher stories. And then with the baby, we moved the recording to Sunday, and then shifted release up to Wednesday, and then we moved it back to recording back to Tuesday for the summer. And then we've found it's easier to go back to Sunday, and we're just going to stick with that. So to get recording and release closer together again, we're going to be moving the release date to Tuesdays. So you'll get next week's episode on Tuesday, not Thursday. So be ready for it. Be watching for it. That's how it's going to be for, you know, probably the next, you know, long, long, long time. But it could change again as we continue to work out how we're doing the podcast in a sustainable, high quality way while having a baby. We had a contest that ended Saturday, this past Saturday, as of either recording or release. I am at a minimum trying to upgrade Lauren's microphone and possibly the guest microphone. Lauren's microphone is definitely going to be happening here soon.
Woo!
The guest microphone, I've actually been rethinking, considering how many times Kylie has knocked over the stand.
She's destructive.
And how many times with her and or other babies in the room when I'm tearing down, I have pulled it or knocked it or pushed it onto the floor. And I kind of like the idea of the mobile microphone that's getting set up being something that can survive being driven over by a tour bus.
It's a good idea.
Which that mic can. Lauren's mic's on a stand. It's not going anywhere. Putting a $300 mic there should be fine. But yeah, the one that's in the temporary setup, yeah, that's scary.
Kylie is just looking excited at the idea of knocking over this $300
God,
mic.
She's so excited.
She really wants to knock over a $300 mic. Wants... Okay, somebody needs to give us $300 to give a microphone that Kylie can knock on the floor.
Yeah, there we go.
Yep.
I was just thinking of the quote from Adventure Time. This one likes to break bottles.
So we had the contest, and one winner was the person who donated the most money for the microphone upgrades.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
That was Fred.
Fred!
Nice going, Fred.
So the Trouble with God by Chris Matheson, autographed and signed by Chris Matheson and provided by Chris Matheson to us to give away to however we chose. Fred, you get a copy.
Awesome.
The other copy will be going to a randomly selected patron / donor, and the random number was 4, which ended up being Rachel B., who has been a patron since March 10, 2016.
Wow. Nice. And no shipping.
We'll see.
Okay, well, we'll see. She's local.
But if you want to support the show, atheistnomads.com/donate is the place to find out how.
Do it. Do it, do it, do it.
For feedback, we didn't get any messages directly, but the listener survey is going on, and we are now, as of the date of recording, have 12 responses.
Nice. Trickling in. Not bad considering you've only been announcing it at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Let's go for a baker's dozen, though. Let's get 13.
Come on. Well, let's go for like 28.
I would like to get 50.
I would love.
Could he be a good?
Wow, we were really lowballing it there, Gary. Realistic expectations.
Now
it'll be up for a while.
With the concept of it being to try to boost the chance for getting advertising, the magic number for advertising is to get 250 responses from surveys. I'd be happy with 50.
I think you got enough listeners to do 250. I think everyone go out there and do the survey. And
just please, it's your homework.
I doubt we have enough listeners that will actually do the survey. Yes, listeners, this is a challenge to you to actually complete the survey because I don't believe you will actually do it.
Y'all got called out.
12 have so far. Anyway, so reading a couple of the responses we got since the last time we recorded. On the question of what do you like about the show, we got everything. I love the support staff. Wink. As a listener of many podcasts, I like your concept. You seem to be yourselves. I like that you allow the conversation to live its own life, and we never know where the discussion will end.
The weeds. In the weeds.
Especially with Mikey.
Especially with Kylie.
And the support staff, for those of you who don't know it, on the About Us page on atheistnomads.com, I list as our support staff our producer, Kylie, assistant producer, Rocco, our chihuahua who helps Mark edit points, and our director of guest services, Bucky, who tries to check on guests and make sure they aren't getting bored and seeing if they want to play.
Yes.
He's brought his...
I thought she was an intern. Did she get...
Intern, you're right. She's intern.
Okay.
Kylie, the intern, Rocco, the assistant producer.
No, she's still intern. She's still learning.
Bucky, the director of guest services.
She's learning about keyboards by smacking them.
And yes, the letting the conversation live its own life is, as the host, wonderful and terrifying.
Considering your guess.
Yeah. Mikey.
Called out.
Okay, so next response. Great discussion from others with logic and reason. Very nice. Talking about local issues, foreign news that doesn't get highlighted in mainstream media.
Nice.
I'm guessing that one came from somebody in Boise.
Yeah.
I didn't ask the question of where are you, figuring I don't need that information because I can get demographic information on where people are downloading from elsewhere.
I don't want to interrupt, but I'm seeing birds feed outside your window. They're really distracting.
Yep.
This is perfect.
Empty bird feeder. They are pissed.
They got a couple seeds.
Be careful when you go out there. they may go for your eyes.
Just wait for the squirrels to start chasing each other around the tree. That was mesmerizing yesterday.
I would like to see that.
One response was dusting off the degree. Lauren, fun guests, and the dedication to not just being straight, white, male, cis voices.
Which apparently is paying off because what did you say? Like 50% of our listeners are male and 50% are female.
Well, 50% are male and 50% are not male.
Not male. So, I mean, I dare you to find another podcast with that kind of... Of course, we're only talking about 12 people so far.
Yeah.
But still, that's really good.
So, across podcasting, I believe the stats are somewhere around 3/4 of all listeners being male. Across atheism, the numbers are somewhere around 2/3 to 3/4 being male. And having only half of our listeners being male and 1 out of the 12 being non-binary, that's pretty freaking awesome. And the final one is, I like knowing that I'm not alone in the world in reference to both my lack of religion and sexuality. I like knowing that I'm not alone in the world in reference to both my lack of religion and sexuality. I checked, she's female and gay, so a lesbian. I've only lived in Texas, which means that Christianity is all I ever really see in my entire life. I've only met one atheist in person because it's so Christian down here. Thank you all so much for doing this podcast. It's nice to know that there are other people similar to me somewhere out there.
Yeah, this is Idaho, so we feel you on that one.
And that is why we do this podcast.
To not be alone, to make sure people do not feel that they're completely ostracized in their ideas and beliefs. It's important, really important.
The reason I started listening to atheist podcasts was because that's what made me comfortable with being me, being an atheist. The first 2.5 years after I 2 years after I left the seminary, I was ashamed of what I was. And then I discovered Atheist Podcasts with Atheist News and Chariots of Iron.
Oh, yeah.
And found out that there are other people like me and that that's okay.
This is the same reason I listen to serial killer podcasts.
And we've gotten feedback from people before that we're filling this need for them. And it never gets old hearing. But it's been a while, so...
No, that's sweet. That's really nice. Yeah. I think it's important. To, if you feel alone in your, well, your community and sometimes your world, it's an awful feeling.
And the other thing is, if you feel alone, talk to us. Let us know. This can be a two-way conversation.
Go do the survey.
We have a, you can leave us a message with SpeakPipe. You can leave us a voicemail message. You can email us. You can ask to be anonymous. You can just ask us not to share your message. I am happy to respond. I've even responded to people who have emailed us thinking because we have nomads in our name that we're a podcast about being atheists living in vans.
Have we thought about doing that?
Lauren would divorce me.
I can get the RV back in my spot, like, you know, in my property anytime.
Yeah, I like having an intact family.
Nah, agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. And enough square footage to be able to record is also nice.
Take so the show on the road.
How could the show be improved? Oh, and we are going to be getting a mobile studio set up too.
So. Oh, nice.
That's going to be awesome.
That should be exciting, yeah.
How could the show be improved? One, an interview with Kylie would be interesting. Wink. Yeah, I think it would be, and you think it would be, and I doubt anybody else does. Give us about a year?
She's
maybe two?
Right now, she's the baby from the series of inconvenient...
Unfortunate
events, yeah. She's like the baby who just chomps on everything right now. With those, she got those great big incisors.
Mm-hmm. The next response we got was more people of color. I absolutely agree.
I think I can help you out there. In Boise, I mean, we don't have that many people of color in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, add in much less atheists of color. I've got a couple that I can probably hook you up with.
All right.
That might be a good addition to the show.
That would be a really good perspective to get some atheists of color from Boise.
Yeah.
Because we've gotten people of color, with the exception of Raquel, who is Mexican. We've gotten, who is local, we've had, the only people of color we've had have been remote. Part of that is just the fact of the demographics here.
Yeah, although that's changing quickly. So the growth we've had has brought black people to Boise seemingly on purpose. We've had plenty of people who have, you know, been here through, because they're forced to be here to some degree, but we've... We seem to have a lot of black people just this last year that are here because they want to be.
Hmm.
So I think that's pretty new for the area. We still have so few people of color, but in this last, just this over the summer, I have seen so many more people of color than I've ever seen in my entire life in Boise. And that's even living near, you know, refugee areas in town. So I'm pretty excited about that. But I've actually got a couple people that I know personally who would probably be a good addition to bring on.
And as far as the authors for the essays on women v. religion, my first pick off of that were the women who did Black Women v. Religion, because that is, they're only the third and fourth black women we've had on the show. After 278 episodes now, that is horrific.
Tough.
It's unacceptable.
Especially if you're going to go local, really, really tough. But people I was actually thinking of was a woman. So that might be a, you know, a special edition kind of thing. But
oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah. They're underserved. The black community is underserved as far as atheism goes, I think. And a lot of atheism, it has to do with... ability. So like we're privileged enough being white males that we can kind of do our thing and say fuck you to anybody else who disagrees. Not everyone else is so privileged. And in a lot of areas, the church actually does do a lot of good to the small community they serve. So that's what they're used to seeing. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily see the broader negativity of religion. Yeah. So a lot of black people are still pretty favorable to religion itself.
Mm-hmm.
Completely understandably so. When the government doesn't provide what they should and the church does, yeah, you're going to have a completely different perspective.
Now, of course, for more details for that, check back a couple episodes, Black Women v. Religion. It's an incredible interview.
Two episodes back?
I think it's two episodes back. Well worth it. It was honestly one of the most enjoyable interviews I've ever done.
Fantastic.
As the interviewing experience. That's obviously different than the listening experience. It was awesome. Anyway, the final response we got on how the show could be improved was, I would have said more puppy news, but Lauren told us about Can I Pet Your Dog podcast, and that fills the need. And yes, Can I Pet Your Dog is awesome. Asking if that was Rebecca. I don't know if that was Rebecca. These interviews are... or these.
Hi, Rebecca!
The surveys are anonymous. So that wraps it up. Lauren, thank you for wrangling the dogs and baby.
Oh my God.
Gary, thank you for joining us.
Having me. This has been fantastic.
And listeners, remember, not all those who wander.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.
And in other news, we have a survey. I have so far only... we also have a baby. Kylie, stop hitting the mic.
Good job, Kylie.